It looks like we're on.
We're on.
Great, thank you. Well, all right, it's the Thursday, January 17th, 2008, Zone 3 Advisory Committee meeting, and Mr. Beaton, John Beaton is filling in for our normal stand-in, Mr. Benedicts, and Mr. Beaton is our water quality manager. So if you could, Mr. Beaton, call the roll, see who's here.
Mr. Ehring?
Here.
Ms. Bright? Mr. Costello? Mr. Gehring?
Here.
Mr. Wallace?
Here.
Mr. Runnels? And Ms. Dean?
Here.
We have a quorum.
Okay, great. We have a quorum. Thank you. Public comment. This is the time for people to comment on items which are not on the agenda. If there is anyone in the audience who has any comments to make, please step up and make those comments. Seeing none, we'll close the public comment period. How about the meeting minutes of November 15th? Did everybody have a chance to take a look at those? And
yes.
Do you have any questions or comments or a motion to approve?
I would make a motion that we approve the minutes of Tuesday, November the 15th.
I would second that.
I didn't have a problem with it either.
Great, thank you. We have a motion and second, and all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Passing unanimously. Before we move on, a couple of housekeeping items, Mr. Beaton.
Yes.
Mrs. Dean tells me that she has been appointed the delegate from Oceano, and we will likely have an alternate, but I don't know who it might be. Unless Mr. Wallace might know.
No, I don't. I haven't heard yet who would be your alternate.
I have the committee assignments at home, but I didn't bring them, so I forgot to look.
But
I'll let you know.
Okay, thank you.
I can email you.
Okay. Procedurally, though, that appointment is taken to the Board of Supervisors.
That's my understanding, yes.
All right. And then in Grover Beach, we have a new delegate. Councilmember Chuck Ashton is the new delegate. He's not going to make the meeting tonight. And Councilmember Karen Bright will revert to being an alternate, as I understand it.
Okay.
So those two. All right. Next, we have the Lopez Recreation Status Report. I don't see Don Mellon, but we have another gentleman. Could you stand up and tell us your name again and give us your report?
My name is Dan Chapman, Park Ranger Specialist at Lopez Lake, here for Don Mellon. The visitation's been pretty stable, typical for the period of December. Tends to be one of our slower periods. We had about 20% occupancy on the weekends, less on the weekdays, pretty quiet up there during the week. Day use has been pretty strong on the weekends, and we're typically in our phase where we're selling a lot of annual passes, being the first of the year. Plans have been submitted and approved for a new playground. It's going to be installed near our Mallard Camp area. That's going to replace the 30-year-old playground we've had there since the park was built. And that's in the Mustang area. It's also going to be ADA compliant. We expect that to be done pretty quick. They're looking to have that in the next couple months. We had zero critical incidents to report, which is always a good thing. Trout fishing has been good. Limits being reported in Cottonwood if you're interested in coming out. Bass and catfish been moderate. Department of Fish and Game has started their plants, and the park will purchase some fish beginning in February, be monthly for about 4 months, culminating in our trout derby. Interpretive events, monthly hikes continue, and our fishing clinics we have every month. Infrastructure repairs are ongoing, lots of projects, picnic table, fire pit replacement. We're still going to convert the overflow area into primitive camping. We're doing some upgrades to our nature center, some pathways. It's going to be a native garden, new picnic areas. We're in the second phase of our California Boating and Waterway grant. We've already done the parking lot, repaved, and we're going to be putting in the new launch ramps and courtesy dock shortly. Lake levels are down a little bit, comparison from last year to this. This year we're at 68%. Last year at the same time we're at 83%. Revenues are also down a little bit, as was the attendance, which all seem to correspond this month. And that's the report. Any questions?
All right, thank you, Dan. Any questions for Mr. Chapman?
Yeah, I just had a quick question, Dan, about the attendance and the comparison to 2006, it seems like that it's a fairly substantial decline in attendance for December.
Right.
Was there a particular reason in looking back at the lake levels? They were higher in 06.
Yeah, you happen to have bad weather when people would typically be camping. We get a lot of cancellations.
Okay.
I do recall last December, in 06, it was, we didn't get much rain. And this year, we tended to have a couple of rain events on the weekends. I think that accounts for more of it.
Thank you.
Before you leave, I wonder, Mr. Chairman, if I could ask a question.
Sure.
I'm a little bit concerned about the ramps.
Okay.
Was this just overcoating on that ramp and the building of new docks at the marina there?
Right. They did an overlay, a 2-inch overlay on the entire parking lot.
Oh, okay.
And they also redid the very top of the ramp where a lot of the concrete and where the concrete
was awful rough.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's all been redone. And they actually poured concrete in that area because it does take a lot of abuse from the vehicles and the trailers. And so that's all concrete now instead of asphalt. So that should wear a lot better now than it did previously.
Okay. Has this being only 68% had any effect on being able to launch off the main ramp?
No. I think when it was designed, it was well designed. You can launch. We were launching boats with no problem when it was down in the low 40s many years ago. So I think you can probably launch, I don't know, much lower than that.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Ms. Dean?
I do have one question about the rainfall. Did you get any inflow or increase in lake capacity from the January big, what we thought was going to be the big one?
Well, it was. Actually, we did get 4.75 inches over that weekend period, which was pretty significant. And we did have, there's some immediate runoff from that. But it really didn't get to all the creeks flowing where the creeks stay, you know, the levels stay up for weeks and months at a time like it typically can if we get a substantial amount of rainfall after maybe 15 inches when the ground is saturated. So what we need is rain now. Now is when we would get the creeks flowing and the runoff we need.
So more rain is needed.
Yeah, so maybe it came up 6 inches.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing really significant.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chapman.
I just remarked that I live out above the lake.
Mm-hmm.
And at my place, I had 3.5 in that last three-day storm. And the canyon above my place did run for a little bit, but it didn't stay running. Typically, in a normal year, wouldn't start to run for the remainder of the year until we got past 18 inches, and we're about 11 at where I am. So we still have a bit of rain to go before that lake starts to really inflow.
I hope it happens.
Engages to about 6.62 at the front of the dam and about 6.96 at the rec area sites. Craig Kessler, the chief plant operator, said that at the water treatment plant, they've had about 8.19 inches so far this season, which goes back to July 1st. The lake level is lake elevation is 503.02 feet, and that equals 33,676 acre feet, or about 68.2% of capacity. And I looked back at the change in the lake elevation storage during this rain, and essentially what happened is it remained constant, went up just ever so slightly, maybe 20 acre feet of storage, but pretty much held constant, and now is slowly dropping again. The raw water quality remains good at the lake and at the terminal. The water treatment plant is producing 3.5 MGD. State water deliveries are 1.25 MGD. The downstream release from the dam is 4 MGD. Treated quality water quality is also good. Craig Kessler, the chief plant operator, reports that the turbidity of the water coming off the membrane racks is about 0.01 NTU or less. And I'd note that's an improvement of about a factor of 10 over the old plant, where they used to struggle to maintain a 0.1 NTU. So he says they really are doing a good job with the membranes. Since the new plant came online, I'd also note that the THMs have improved significantly. At the Port San Luis, where we'd expect to find the highest values, the last two quarters have averaged 26 parts per billion. There's 25 and 27. And that's well below the limit of 80 parts per billion. If you go back 1 year for the same period of time, the average was 70 parts per billion, 70, and the year before that it was 72. So it has come down significantly. since then, which I think is a benefit to all the users. December 16th was the last day that the graveyard shift was staffed at the plant. Operators are now working two shifts rather than three, from 7:30 in the morning to midnight. As has always been the case, there are standby operators to able to respond to any alarms or problems at the plant during those off hours. In addition, the superintendent and assistant superintendent live on site, and they're able to respond if as needed. This concludes my operation report.
Ms. Keenan.
IP is clean in place. Process that we anticipated to be once a month had bumped all the way up to once a day, and so it was significant. But they've been able to back off on that. But it continues to be a concern, and it's something that we're working with Black & Veatch and Paul Corporation to try to see what can be done. There's some ideas there. When we talk about the plan upgrade and such, I'll mention some more about that. But it is a concern, and it's not something we want to see for the long term. Anything we can do to improve that, I think, will save us money and give us a better operation out there.
So you'll speak to the pH issue in your other report?
I can speak to that now. The pH, there was talk about adjusting the pH to try to prevent some of the scaling of the water. The water from Lopez Lake is very hard, has always been hard. And this new plant, they've seen a number of places where those chemicals, the hardness of the water has scaled out and coated the inside of pipes and caused problems. There's also concern that it may be coating the membrane fibers themselves, and that was the reason why they were using additional amounts of chemical, the acids and such they need to clean that. There was talk of possibly adjusting the pH of the entire plant, try to lower that, suppress that pH in the hopes that would minimize some of this the scaling. Possibly a better idea or another idea would be to reduce the hardness in the water that we use to make up the sodium hypochlorite solutions. Sodium hypochlorite is a very alkaline solution. You add that to the water, it's going to cause a precipitate right there. And that's a solution that we use to clean the membranes. So you can imagine it's kind of like taking a trying to clean something with dirty water, so to speak. So the possibility of softening or reducing the hardness of the water that's used to make up that cleaning solution might help us out. Other places in the plant, that wouldn't address that, but that's one of the things that I think we should look at and see if that would improve the process. That's a much smaller amount of water that would have to be cleaned rather than the whole 6 million gallons a day. You might be talking about 1,700 gallons a day, quite a bit less. The one who's dealing, I think, pretty much on a one-to-one basis with them, and it's my impression that he's at every opportunity tries to hold their feet to the fire. And he had indicated that they're still holding back several hundred thousand dollars of their payment, and trying to address these issues. Obviously, he'd been unhappy with the performance and continues to try to get some action out of them, but it's difficult. But it is still something that he continues to work on.
It does basically seem like a problem that they would have known what kind of water was going to go into the system.
It you would believe that, yes. It's Lopez water. It's never been a secret that it's hard water out there. And I know when we first talked about the different possible treatment processes out there, a softening plant has always been one that has been evaluated. But there, again, with a softening plant, there are issues with that, and one of them was disposal of the sludge. It would produce a significant amount of sludge. I think at that point in time, it was estimated the cost for that would be pretty exorbitant or troublesome. So that was not the solution that was picked. But again, we did pilot testing of the water here. That was the same water. The hardness was no different at the time of the pilot testing than it is now. Hasn't been any changes in the water quality. So should have been something that Black & Veatch and Paul Corporation, the membrane manufacturer and the people who
manufactured the automatic valves.
The sensitive section. Yeah. And they were certainly well aware of the water quality.
And these valves are, the sensitivity of them and the wires that you're talking about as far as shutting them off and so forth are washed automatically every so many minutes or something, so many hours of use.
The membrane, there are racks of membranes. And in the racks there are modules, and in the modules there are a number of these fibers and such. Yeah. Every so many minutes they do what's called a reverse flow air scour, where they reverse the flow through the membranes to try to push things that have plugged up on the outside off of the membranes from the opposite direction. And then they also bubble air through the modules at the same time. It helps to shake these long spaghetti-like strands that shake all this stuff off. The water that comes off of that then is actually recycled back to the front of the plant, hypochlorite and sodium hydroxide and such to clean the membranes. The need for those cleanings are based on time for some. Others on what they call a TMP, the transmembrane pressure. They monitor how much effort it takes to push the water through these membranes. And as you can imagine, as those membranes clog up, it takes more pressure to put them through. And so they record those pressures continually. When they get up to a certain point, that they'll do the backwash and they'll see an improvement in that membrane pressure. Over time, that improvement will be less and less and less as the membranes don't clean up as well from the simpler cleanings, and that's when they go to the more rigorous cleanings like the CIP, the citric acid. But ideally, that should be once a month. That should return the membranes to their full performance again. And then over a period of time, 10 years or more, membrane modules, you're just going to have to replace those.
I know my experience with this has generally been that you need soft water. You need to have water softening equipment on site in order to run that through so that when you clean those off that you're basically using soft water. But there has been no consideration of installation of water softeners?
I would say not at this point. It hasn't been something that's on the list, but as an issue, that would certainly be one of the considerations, one of the ideas to see if we can improve this process or make it work by softening the cleaning solution.
Yeah. Thank you very much. That's an excellent explanation, and I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Mr. Wells.
John, mine's not so technical. I was just wondering about the staffing of the plant. And I see that you said that you've eliminated the graveyard shift. Were you running a swing shift before we changed over the plant? And if we are still running a swing shift, do you see that continuing at some point in the future, or the ability to drop off that cost of personnel as well?
With the old plant, no. We were running a single shift today, seven days a week. We did have people on standby, and as needed, they would come into work and do that, and they would get called in once in a while. But for the most part, it was just a single shift each day. With this new plant, but certainly in the future, if we get to a point where things are just running smooth as can be, I would anticipate that the plant would be staffed accordingly. But at this point in time, I think, and for the next year's budget, I think they're still looking at a staffing level of two shifts a day.
I would just hope that with the sophistication of the control systems that we have there and the SCADA systems that we have in place and that we've paid for, that at some point we could fully utilize the potential of those systems and maybe look at some reduction in staff time there.
And that's actually one of the reasons they are able to cut back to two shifts a day. They do have laptop computers now there that will tie into the SCADA system. And in fact, they have used those now when there's been an alarm generated, calls the operator that's on standby. They've been able to go online with that laptop, evaluate the plant, and actually make a change from their home there. And that part has worked. There are other other issues with the plant where you really do need to have someone there, and sometimes it's not an issue you can address from home.
No, I understand. Yeah. Thanks.
But it has worked. That certainly has always been the intention to fully utilize that SCADA system. As you mentioned, you know, we paid a fair amount of money for that to provide that functionality. In addition, we were looking for the SCADA system to make it easier to generate the pretty complex reports that we have to generate every month to the Department of Public Health on the operations of the plant. Another thing that's there has improved. It's not right where we want it yet, but we kind of see the light at the end of the tunnel there. Continue to work with Black and Veatch to make some programming changes to allow us to push that button and get the report out that we need.
Good. Thank you.
John, I did have a question on the reduction in THM values towards the end of the system. Seems to me that's quite a benefit to the system in many respects. I'm wondering if you have some thoughts on why the new process is reducing THMs.
If you look at Lopez water, there's a certain organic content in that water, and when we add the disinfectants to it, they combine with the organic matter to form compounds like THMs and haloacetic acids that we know to be potentially carcinogenic over a long period of time, 70 years. Regulations require us to minimize those of going lower than that. At that point in time, we looked at options and we brought in a different disinfectant at the front of the plant, chlorine dioxide, which has the ability to disinfect the water, to oxidize the things in the water that we want to oxidize to help set up the water for better treatment, but it doesn't form THMs. That reduced it some more, brought us down to where we were less than 80, but not quite where we wanted to be. The water leaves the plant, goes out the distribution system, it still goes into Avila and Arroyo Grande and Grover Beach and Oceano systems where it mixes with that water, and there's still the potential for forming more THMs there. So we wanted to reduce it more. I think the biggest change in the plant now that's resulted in the lowering of the THMs is converting the clear water reservoir to be chloraminated instead of chlorinated. And we used to give it a nickname of the THM factory because the water would go in there. There's not as much turnover in that reservoir as we'd like to see, and it was chlorinated. And it would just form a lot of THMs. And so that water would come out, we'd add ammonia to it then and form the chloramines and kind of stop that production, but it was already too late. So now with the changes in the plant, we're able to send chloraminated water into that reservoir. We're also routing the state water into the reservoir too, so we get a little extra mixing there and a shorter detention time in that reservoir. And those two things, I think, in combination with the other improvements that we've made in the plant, continuing to use chlorine dioxide, maybe having a little bit better organics removal with dissolved air flotation than the old plant, and probably a shorter amount of time treating that water before we add the ammonia to it, have all combined to significantly reduce those THMs. So that is one bright area to look at in the plant. And that and the turbidity, the membranes, it's been an expensive process, but they still are a pretty robust barrier against things like Giardia and Cryptosporidium. They're strong enough to where literally you could probably take raw water and just run the raw water through those membranes and add a disinfectant afterwards and feel relatively safe. With the quality of the water that comes out of there. Wouldn't want to do that all the time, but I mean, it has the potential for being able to handle that kind of a load. Right, going into that, it was a different technology, one that you see more often in wastewater plants than in water plants. Right. It was not one that we had a lot of experience with, and there was a fair amount of skepticism about running something like DAF there. When the pilot plant came in and we evaluated that, I remember the operators looking at it and going, boy, this thing is really doing the job. And they were very impressed with it, and it changed their opinion. The old plant was a conventional plant. worked well for 30 years, but you know, it had its issues too. I remember operators from years back indicating that it was a plant where we had the coagulation, flocculation, and really filtration after that, that sedimentation step that's back there where you're hoping to settle out all that flocculated particles, never really settled like they thought it should. And there was talk that maybe they were too short. It should have been twice as big and more time there. That was one of the advantages with the DAF, is that rather than allowing or forcing these particles to settle out, and our particles have a sort of a natural tendency to float, DAF does just the opposite. It floats it up to the top. And so it utilizes that algae's natural tendency to float and brings it up to the top. On one hand, you can see it there too, whereas on the old plant, you know, things that set off the bottom, you couldn't see down that far, and you wouldn't really see what was coming out. But it has made a difference on this plant. The old plant, we'd look at things like the it's called a settled water turbidity. We measure that, and you'd like to see those to be a certain number, and that was a difficult thing for them to achieve. I believe it's an easier process with this with the DAF. DAF is not without its drawbacks. It's obviously more energy intensive, and you know, it takes a little tweaking such there. But it is working, and the operators have been happy with that. It is removing those particles, and I would suspect contributing in a slight way toward the reduction of the THMs by removing all these organics without allowing them to come in contact with the chlorine later on.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions for Mr. Beaton on the operations? And you kind of swerved into plant upgrade status. Yes. Do you have more to add on that?
I will. Black and Beach met with the Zone 3 TAC in December. At that meeting, 20 action items or issues were identified, discussed, and prioritized. Some of the chemical feed challenges. There were some piping issues. Again, a laundry list of about 20 items. Some of the programming issues. Some things have been dealt with or are being dealt with, but there's more on the list than we'd like to see. You know. As Mr. Benedict's reported to the Zone 3 TAC, he's asked the engineering consulting firm of Kennedy Jenks to step in and review our issues. Black and Beach knows about this request. Kennedy Jenks, I understand, should be at the plant sometime this month. Mr. Benedix has also invited the firm of Quad Knopf to kind of take a walk through the plant and see what they possibly could propose. We don't have any contract with them right now. They have no membrane specialists and on their staff, but they do have other specialists. And so he's asked them to, you know, just come down and take a visit to the plant and see if they've got some ideas on what they might propose. And if that looks favorable, then we can pursue additional work with him. As I mentioned earlier, Mr. Benedix remains in contact with Black and Beach, and he's attempting to hold them financially accountable, including financially, as much as possible. I went by the plant this morning. One of the issues that I saw them dealing with is the housing for those outdoor exposed online monitoring equipment. So they were adding the metal building surrounds and such for those. I would also note, again, that in spite of all these problems and such they've had here and all these outstanding issues, the operators have been able to run the plant 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, with a few exceptional, you know, shutdowns. And they have been producing good water. And that's my upgrade status report.
Great, thank you. Questions? Mr. Earing, you have a question?
No, sir.
Mr. Dean?
I think that's an excellent report. Very good.
Well, the important thing is that we're producing good water for the communities.
Yes.
Thank you. All right. Thank you. It looks to me as though we are to Mrs. Jennifer Colvard to talk to us about the second quarter budget status.
Good evening. For the record, my name is Jennifer Colvard with the County Public Works Department. My first item tonight is the second quarter budget status report. Please refer to the handout attachment 3-1. There are three graphs here reflecting the second quarter budget to actual results, the savings, and some other categories. Since the onset of operations of the new water treatment plant, As we've discussed earlier, we went from staffing the plant 8 hours a day up to 24 hours a day and currently at 16 hours a day. In addition to the increased labor costs, chemicals and utilities are projected to double by the year end. The third graph compares non-routine operations and maintenance. These costs are currently under budget, $220,000, and the majority of this is due to the pigging project and HCP water rights. While we make our best effort to budget accurately, there are certain variables that we cannot predict, as in the increased water treatment plant costs. Even with the increased water treatment plant costs, in total, Flood Zone 3 costs are currently 21% under budget. The majority of this is due to the unspent capital outlay at this point. There are two ways that we've talked about that we can handle the increased operations and maintenance. Normally, when capital projects are not completed, we roll them over into the future budgets. One way we could handle this is we could offset the increased O&M costs with the money for the perimeter fencing and then rebudget this in a future budget. The other option would be to bill the difference in a supplemental billing, while understanding we just returned a fairly large credit for the final billings for 06-07. In essence, we would be asking to take back the money we just gave you. And I think in total, the full credit that we gave back was about $454,000 in total. My second item is the fiscal year 08-09 budget. I can just kind of roll into all of them.
Before you leave that first item, Jennifer, I'm curious on the how to handle the overage. Is there some plan to meet with the financial officers of the various agencies?
Well, we are going to meet when we meet for the budget. We can also discuss that at that point.
All right. Okay.
February 7th?
February. I do have it in my notes.
Middle of
February. February 19th is the Finance Committee meeting.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. My second item is the fiscal year 08-09 budget. I'm now going to distribute those budgets for you to review at a later point, and I will also be mailing these to the Finance Directors and the TAC Committee. I would like to point out that we have a new page in the budget book this year, which was requested by your committee in previous years, the cost per acre foot schedule, which most of you expressed an interest in receiving as well, is located on page 14 of the budget book. And as a reminder, our process for the Zone 3 budget is as follows. Public Works distributes the budget book to your advisory committee tonight with a brief overview. Public Works staff meets with the Zone 3 Finance Committee and TAC members at two meetings in February where we discuss any concerns, answer the questions regarding the proposed budget. I would encourage each of you to meet with your respective TAC and Finance Committee members to discuss any issues that you have regarding the budget prior to these meetings. We will meet with your committee again on the March 20th meeting, give a presentation of the budget, which should last approximately 5 minutes, and then we will ask for your advisory committee's endorsement of the budget. The budget, after approved by your committee, would go to the board mid-June for adoption. In a very brief summary, the budget is recapped as follows. Total operations and maintenance increases 29%. The total billings have increased 11%, which primarily is due to the increase in costs at the water treatment plant. The 08-09 budget it's still consistent with the five-year billing estimate. The five-year billing estimate reports, which we've provided to your agencies over the last 5 years, we are still staying under the total billing amount. So even though O&M is up, we have kept within the five-year estimates. In the meantime, if you do have any questions, please feel free to call me or email me in the meantime. I do have one more item. I don't know if you want me to go ahead and do it all now or if you want to ask some questions first.
Any questions on the budget document before we move on? This
Just for future.
I need to look it over before I got any questions.
Really for consideration at the March meeting, right?
Right.
I just had one quick question.
Go ahead, thank you.
On the per acre foot costs at the back on page 14 there, are all the agencies within CSA 12 at the same cost per acre foot? I see you have, of course, divided out by agency, and says CSA 12 is one.
How many acre feet you have? But I will follow up on that.
It may not be appropriate. Maybe it'd be better just to have it as a sidebar, but it might be noted as a second page or to a footnote here as to what the cost per agencies in CSA 12 would be.
Okay.
The other entities don't have that problem. They're all the same there for the cities and the OCSD.
Right. Okay.
Jennifer, was there a summary page in the budget that would give the numbers that you went through that generally summarized our status?
There is somewhere.
Okay, thank you. Front page.
What number is it?
Front page.
Oh. Page I, apparently.
That's where it ought to be at the beginning for the summary.
So you found it?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, my final item tonight is the plan upgrade budget tracking handout. Please refer to the table in your handout attachment 4-1. You may notice that this is a little different from the reports that we've provided to your committee in the past. Since we are now so close to the end of the project, we've updated the report to show what we are projecting as the final cost for the water treatment plant to be. Mr. Wallace, I think at the last meeting you had a couple questions, and one was regarding that report. You had wanted to know where the authorized amounts came from, and this report that you're looking at now is we've revised it to be based on what we're projecting the final cost to be, but I did want to follow up with you on that. There was I think three separate columns. There was an original budget, a revised project budget estimate, and then there was an authorized amount. I don't know. Right. You remember the conversation?
Yes, I was going to ask you about that.
Okay. I did follow up on that, and basically what we're held to is the $26 million is what our authorized amount to spend. We do break it into the four categories. When it went to the board, there was a preliminary design, the design, construction, and construction management, and that's really what we're held to. We broke it out. The rest of it's pretty much for our own internal use to kind of keep within a specific guideline. If we were to go outside those four categories, we would have to send a request to the state to move the amounts between those four categories.
Question?
Yes.
What's the fourth category, Jennifer?
Well, you'll see three on there for construction. Another one is construction management, and that's within the construction category.
Okay. I guess my question before really related to those things which we had fixed contracts on. And they
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
I think my question before related to just observing the difference between the contract amounts for various consultants and contractors. And it seemed like that, especially with respect to the consultants, that some of those budgets were more than what had been authorized.
There may have been a contingency amount put in that.
Yeah. I understand. But the concern was, were there those relationships were being amended formally as they were going through the process, and not just indicating that we had an overrun here, but yet that the board had actually approved those changes.
Any amendments did go to the board.
Yeah.
I think the one category that was off was the labor in the last report.
I don't remember specifically without looking
and
back.
And I think that was probably just a plug number.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
That concludes my report. So if you have any other questions?
Any other questions? Mrs. Dean?
No.
Mr. Earing?
No, I have none. Just one final question there, Jennifer. I see that the total budget compared to the actual projected cost shows it will be a little over our $26 million. Do you expect there to be additional overages in subsequent budgets or subsequent accountings?
What we're looking at is approximately $111,000, and in order to pay for that, we can only, out of the SRF loan, we can only go up to the $26 million.
Right. Right.
So anything beyond that in this 111 would have to be presented to you in the budget, basically.
But look, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Looking at the 111,000, and that's a projection at this time.
You asking if that could change?
If it's going to go up.
That could change, but I doubt it would change fairly significantly from that. Dean and I sit down probably weekly, and we've been, for the last couple months, going through this pretty regularly, and I think that we've picked up everything that we think is going to be in here.
If I could mention a few things. At the bottom, John, there's he indicated to me that $26 million was the cap, and they had no intention of going above that.
Well, with the overage that we're showing there, will that be cranked back into the budget as a capital expense for fiscal year?
I think we'll have to look at each item separately to see how we're going to want to present that. We're not sure how we're going to.
And I know that we have also, maybe this is a question for you, John. I know that we have some discussions going on with Paul and with Black and Veatch and so forth. But yet, when you look at the budget here, it shows, for example, for Black and Veatch, that they the projected costs are exactly what the total cost to date are. And that doesn't reflect any consideration of these discussions that we've been having with them.
And Mr. Minnix also indicated to me, said he's still holding $215,000 of Black and Veatch's money.
We do have that invoice that we have not paid.
Okay. And he's gone back. He has indicated that, as an example, one of the Black and Veatch brought on engineer was charging some time, and that person left. And he's come back and said, we really didn't get anything from this person. He says, I'm not going to, don't bill me for that. And so Black and Veatch has had to come back and adjust some of their or some of their billings and such.
We're looking at their we're requesting their records to look at each day by day, each employee that's worked from Black and Veatch on the upgrade, and looking at line item details, what were they doing to determine if we're going to pay that or not.
Well, that's appropriate, but I guess the question here is that the figure that you show, the $1.4 million,
that is the contract amount.
Assumes that $215,000 that you're holding will eventually be paid.
Correct.
Okay.
With regard to the 475 of miscellaneous vendors, I'm not sure I understood you, Mr. Beaton, regarding the amount of that we have spent. If I heard you correctly, we haven't spent any of that, or we haven't spent all of that?
The 475?
Yes.
I'm sorry. We have not spent that yet. That's what we're projecting, any additional beyond what we've already spent. If you look in the third column, there's the budget column, total cost to date, and then projected additional costs.
Yes.
So that's included in those projected additional costs to come up with the $111,000 over.
Okay, but of the 475, how much?
The 475 and miscellaneous vendors.
Yeah, that ties to that.
Yes. Mr. Beaton.
Doug Bird from the county staff has included a summary of recent discussions with the National Marine Fisheries Service in the agenda packet. Mr. Bird also reports that a conference call took place yesterday, January 16th. Participants included Mr. Bird and John Farhar from our county staff, Anthony Spina from National Marine Fisheries Service, Chuck Hansen from Hansen Environmental, and Curtis Lawler from Stetson Engineers. And Don Spagnolo from the City of Arroyo Grande and the Zone 3 TAC. The purpose of the call was to review a report on developing an acceptable protocol or system for attraction flows for steelhead trout. The proposed system includes using real-time the real-time gauging station on Lopez Creek to estimate inflows into Lopez Lake. System also identifies triggers for timing attraction flow releases. The first trigger would be an estimation of 3,600 acre-feet of inflow into the lake taking place after October 1st. The second trigger would be related to levels of flow at the 22nd Street Bridge in Oceano. During storm events, flows at this location would be expected to increase. The third trigger would come from the real-time water level transmitter at the lagoon at the mouth of Arroyo Grande Creek, where the creek enters the ocean. If the lagoon water level drops quickly, this could be an indication that that sandbar that's holding back the water there has breached, and that we've got substantial flows coming out to the ocean, like an attraction flow. They would send an operator there to verify that that, in fact, was the case. And provided all three of these triggers have been released, as you would expect maybe in a storm event in what part of the year, then the intention would be to try to extend that storm water flow into the ocean to kind of give it a good attraction flow than say, a mediocre one. Mr. Hansen and Mr. Lawler are attempting to plug this type of a scenario into their flow model for the Lopez Dam, looking back historically to see if we had been operating it in this manner, what would be the impact on our drinking water and ag storage behind the dam? What kind of an impact would that have? But that's, again, the goal of the HCP. So another person, I think they're trying to hold their feet to the fire as much as they can. And that concludes my report.
We've got a certain amount of water budgeted for attractant flows in the HCP. Are they sticking to that?
Good question.
I don't know. I believe they are looking at the HCP, trying to evaluate the best what can best preserve our interests in the water and still meet the needs of the fisheries. But as far as the specifics go, I think that would be a Doug Bird question. I honestly don't know.
Questions?
John, did Mr. Spina give you any better idea on scheduling for completing his delayed review of the HCP?
Not that I'm aware of. And again, Doug Bird from our staff has been the one who's most involved in that, and he'd be best able to answer that question. I'd be happy to pass that question on to Doug.
How long has the agency had the document?
Seems like years.
I have some information about that, if you'd be interested.
Oh, you bet.
This was passed on to me by Dennis Delsight, who's the committee chairman on the TAC. The HCP draft was submitted in March 2004 to the National Marine Fisheries. To date, we have received neither approval of the plan or even a marked up copy of anything that would need to be done on it. In addition to that, we spent $950,000 and there doesn't appear to be any end in sight. So I think we have considerable reason to be upset about this, and the technical committee conferred with the design engineer of the water treatment plant also, and there didn't seem to be any solutions with that, but they are working with, as it's been reported, that Dean is working with Black and Beach to try to create. While we sit here worrying about how we're going to be able to supply the water that's necessary to all the people. So I don't know. I'd just like to hear from the rest of you. Are y'all concerned about that?
Mrs. Dean.
I am concerned, but what I like to see is that they are talking, which is a good thing.
That's an improvement.
That is an improvement because we haven't had that for a while. So talking is the beginning, and maybe talking also opens the way to getting what we need. I expected to have an answer about his commitment of time. That was one of my questions, and that's too bad that he hasn't responded yet. I'd try to keep pushing on that forefront to see when you can expect something. Knowing that the smelt takes all precedence. So I am concerned. Yeah, it's been a long time. We keep sending water downstream, and we'd like to get something happening. But talking and having every 2 weeks a telephone conference, if the telephone conferences will work, more power to them. But I think we're working in the right direction.
John? Well, I guess it goes without question that everybody wants to make sure that our document is a sound document based upon good science and that it adequately protects the resources and the environment. I think my major concern is the length of time it's taken to get a response. And I'm sure that these folks, including Mr. Spiener, are very well qualified in their fields, and we welcome their comments, but we don't know what their comments are without them returning and commenting on the document. 4 years is an extremely long period of time to hold that hostage. In the meantime, from what I've seen in the document, we're augmenting the flows in the creek more than what the natural flows would be. So, in effect, we're bettering the situation under what the scientists tell us would be the normal flows in the creek. So, again, it looks like that we're doing our job better than what nature would do otherwise, but to be held hostage for 4 years on a comment on a draft document just to...
Well, and basically another rainy season is going to go by where we're continuing to send water down there, down the creek, that when it's raining, and no possibility that I can see of raising the level significantly in the reservoir.
So far as I understand, we're able to implement our downstream release schedule as soon as we have excess flows in the creek. Is that correct?
That's my understanding, yes.
All right.
In fact, we actually have reduced flows based on creek levels and such, and we're down to 4 million gallons a day right now, which is a little bit less. We'd like to go below that, but they've been closely looking at the levels in the creek, and it just hasn't warranted it yet. Maybe the ground's not saturated enough to,
I thought we were at 4. Where we at 6?
We were at 4.5.
We were at 6 there at last meeting, I think.
Yeah, historically, though, Mr. Beaton, we've been as high as 6 MGD downstream release, and I thought our usual rate was around 4.5.
Yes. But the numbers I recall, again, for a long time, seemed like was 6 MGD that we were releasing. And this last summer, it went down, went back up again for some ag release, and then back down. After this last storm, I believe they, or about the same time, they did reduce it from 4.5 down to 4. That's where it is right now. But beyond that, they don't feel confident in reducing it at this time.
But as we gain history of the effects of the rate of downstream release as opposed to watching the monitoring stations and seeing how the flows are going, we do anticipate on getting better control and perhaps going lower on that, do we?
I believe so, yeah. That was one of the items with this plan was to get those gauging stations and such installed, set up to monitor real time, to be able to react more quickly and accurately to the flows in the creek and hopefully store more water. And as mentioned, it still preserve protect those environmental concerns that we have.
Well, the resource agencies would like to have us
provide attractant flows, but I don't see any incentive on our part to do that until they agree to or approve our...
Make some other accommodations in the management per our interim release program.
Yes.
I just did a little quick calc, Jim, in terms of the 6 MGD that we were releasing. That's enough water for 72 families for a year.
Yes.
That we'll be releasing every day.
Yes.
So that's a...
Very significant.
That's a significant piece of water.
Yes.
Thank you. Any other questions? Comments? Spillway capacity increase concept. Mr. Beaton, what do you have on that?
The Zone 3 Advisory Committee has expressed an interest in spillway modifications, which could potentially increase reservoir capacity over a period of time. One concept is the use of an inflatable structure. Monterey County is currently installing inflatable gates on Nacimiento Dam, and the Zone 3 asked Mr. Benedicts to report back on Monterey's cost for those structures. In the agenda packet is a copy of an email from Doug Bird to Dean Benedict summarizing Monterey County's costs to retrofit the Nacimiento Dam. Monterey will be installing 275-foot gates at $1.5 million each, a control system estimated to cost $2.5 million, and spillway modifications costing $500,000. Their project cost is estimated at $6.7 million, with a bond principal estimated at $7.3 million. Due to the differences between Nacimiento and Lopez dams, costs aren't directly comparable. Size and other issues would affect that, but this should give you an idea of sort of an order of magnitude estimate of what we could possibly looking at. Again, on this subject, Mr. Benedicts is asking URS Corporation to evaluate the spillway capacity increase concept. He intends this to be a very low-cost evaluation at this time. Obviously, the Bureau of Dam Safety would also have to be consulted, and Mr. Benedict's reports that he's continuing to work on this task. This concludes my report.
Questions? John?
I'd love to see an inflatable dam there.
The last study that was done indicated a safe yield somewhere around 800 or 900 acre feet.
800 acre feet or so.
If you took the Nacimiento project at 700.
Yeah.
So we expect to get a better picture of where we are from URS?
That's my understanding. He's asking them to also look at it. He doesn't expect, again, that to be a big contract, maybe only a, you know, a few $1,000 or something, to have them kind of look into that as well.
Okay. So. You know, my recollection is that the Division of Dam Safety had some pretty specific questions that they wanted answered. Are we aiming to answer those questions at this level?
I don't know. He did say that obviously consulting with them is something we would obviously have to do, and probably it's better sooner than later, you know, to determine their concerns and such. But it would be a significant modification to the dam. And,
It seems to me that, you know, I don't know how much this is going to cost. I ran over the other plan that was done some time ago. Sounds like an excellent idea. We've got somebody who's going to try it. But depending upon what the bill is, I would like some kind of assurance that we're going to be able to stop putting excess water down the creek and to keep steelhead trout alive, which there may be or may not be. I mean, I guess they're there. I see them down around the Bridge Street. So I have the feeling that that's true. They are there. But without any indication that we're going to be able to increase the capacity of by rainfall, I'm wondering if we're going to be able to fill that dam up even to its present level, okay? And So I get a little bit concerned of spending that kind of money to begin with until we got some assurance that we're going to be able to fill the dam up to its present level before it starts going over the spillway.
I think you're right. In my mind, that would be part of the study that would have to be done before we go forward.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Anything else? Questions?
Nope.
Comments? No. All right, new business. Surprise inspection. What happened?
Not many OSHA inspections that no violations.
That's great.
Good. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Questions, comments on that one? Other than what we've heard? 2008 meeting schedule.
In the agenda packets, there's the 2008 meeting schedule. I do have additional copies if anyone needs one. But, it's included.
When we get new delegates and alternates, a complete package will be sent to them?
I would assume so. I'll certainly ask Dean to make sure that that's the case.
Anybody got anything on the new schedule at this point?
No, it looks fine.
All right, committee member comments. We'll start with Mr. Earing, see what he's got. Anything?
I don't have any comments. Thank you.
I just want to compliment Mr. Beaton on his chemistry lesson tonight. Thank that you. Was very good. Thank yeah, you very
thank
much.
You. Yeah, I was happy with it.
Very informative.
Thank you.
Mrs. Dean, any comments or
nothing further?
I don't have anything. So the next regular meeting is Thursday, March 20th at Roy Grandy City Council members. We're adjourned.